You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, June the 1st, and it's time for our Friday Week in Review. We are very happy to have with us two great Week in Reviewers, Ed Garvey and Kevin Hermaning, and we welcome your participation, too, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We'll start off with Cindy Sheehan dropping out of the peace movement, talk about some from the latest in Iraq and Iran, for that matter. We'll talk about Fred Thompson saying, looking like he will indeed run for president on the GOP side, and other news from the state capitol as well. There's news with the proposed big oil tax and the smoking ban and other things. So whatever caught your eye is also up there. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Let me welcome our weekend reviewers, Ed Garvey, senior partner, law firm of Garvey, McNeil, and McGilvery, editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And on the telephone, Kevin Hermaning, who is chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. He is also operates Hermaning Financial Group in Wausau, was also a hostage during the Iranian hostage crisis. Good morning to you.
Good morning. And just to clarify, I'm the former chair, though I did have many opportunities in about 12, 15 years of chairing the county party here in Wausau.
So you're joining the Democratic Party?
This is hot news. I'm still one of those progressive Republicans.
Meeting a phone booth.
Yeah, there we go.
I apologize for that. I had the word former here, and I just skipped over it. Speaking of former, Cindy Sheehan is going to be a former peace activist. Ed Garvey, what do you think of that?
Well, I wrote my blog because we've invited Cindy, and she's accepted to be at Fighting Bob Fest on September 8th as one of our leading speakers.
Number one time to plug it this hour.
I'll never mention Bob Fest again on September 8th. You just can't blame her. She's been through a tremendous emotional strain. She lost her son in the war. She's been very ill. She almost died from loss of blood. She's criticized by everybody who, you know, depending on which side you're on. So I don't blame her for taking some time off, but I liked her clarification. She said she was going to at least take 2 months off and then come back with a different approach. So I think Cindy Sheehan will be back, and she has been a marvelous face for the peace movement.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Hermaning?
Well, I think it's going to give her an opportunity to fully grieve the loss of her son, who obviously we all consider the men and women who have died in battle to be heroes. We just passed Memorial Day. So I think this is going to give her an opportunity to finish that grieving process. No question that she's been passionate in her opposition to the war in Iraq, feeling from the beginning that we shouldn't have gone there. But she's her heart was broken. She lost a son. She's a Gold Star mother, and she deserves the respect of everybody for that commitment and loss that she bore on behalf of our country. But I think that this will be a good break for her. She had been the public face of one side of the anti-war movement, but I think to bring the political element into it for just a minute, there's no question that she has made pretty vocal statements that she feels abandoned by the Democrats in Congress in giving in to President Bush in his call for fully funding the troops without a firm timetable to get out of Iraq.
Yeah, I think that was probably the straw that broke the camel's back when the Democrats caved in on the funding without a date for withdrawal. She thought that the Democrats had abandoned ship, and so I think, Kevin, you're right that she's concerned about both parties. Naturally, she had very little hope for the Republican Party, but there was some hope for the Democrats, at least.
Well, it does demonstrate, I think, to have been dogmatic on the position of a firm timetable. I'm sure we'll have some more to say about this, but it demonstrates a lack of knowledge of the process. I mean, my congressman, Dave Obey, of course, chairing the House Appropriations Committee, and we've all seen the blog, the YouTube piece that was put together with the family members of some of those who were there outside of his office in Washington. You know, he had made it very clear that you need to understand the process in order to make the change. Now, I happen to not agree with the change that he and others are advocating, but nonetheless, there's still a process and a system. The system allows for an override, but that wasn't going to happen.
Well, you know, I just looked at it, as I think Cindy Sheehan did, and said the Democrats were elected to the majority in November with an anti-war platform. And it seemed to me they had a duty to continue to push the president. The president couldn't continue vetoing bills with the funding coming to an end. So I just disagree with the decision. But, you know, there's plenty of room here for agreement or disagreement.
Yeah. Well, when Sheehan posted her farewell address on Memorial Day, she did say, "I have invested everything I have into trying to bring peace with justice to a country that wants neither." Does Ed Garvey?
Well, you know, I think, you know, that same day, 10 U.S. soldiers were killed on Memorial Day. We're up to 3,457, I think the total is. And I think, you know, if you focus on that every day, as she has to, because she's asked to speak everywhere in the world, actually, you know, it gets to be pretty depressing. And she was concerned, I think, that the Congress just wasn't responding. When we have probably 70% of the American people wishing that we get out of Iraq now, and yesterday the president, through spokespeople as well as himself, suggesting that we're going to stay there as long as we have had troops in Korea. So, you know, looking at 50 years of, you know, occupation of Iraq, or at least having a military presence, that gets pretty scary. And you'd think that the American people would say, enough of this. We can't afford to take care of our schools or special education or health care. It's time that we started looking inward instead of trying to impose our will on the Iraqi people.
Yeah. It also said, I'm sorry, Kevin Herbening?
Well, Ed sounds a little bit like Pat Buchanan, who...
Oh, please. Now you've done it. Okay, the gloves are off.
You know, one of the interests, are you suggesting that we shouldn't still be in Korea, or that we shouldn't have been there, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years after the North invaded?
Oh, I think we should have removed our troops from Korea, from around the world. You know, we have troops in so many countries, it's almost ridiculous. It's almost looking for a fight. And I think that the idea of remaining in Iraq confirms the suspicion that all of us had from the outset. This invasion was all about oil and had nothing to do with democracy or weapons of mass destruction. They want to keep an embassy there in order to protect our oil reserves.
Yeah. Well, you don't build 25 square mile bases, military bases, in a country expecting to abandon them in a couple of years.
Kevin, were you the one that put the design of the embassy on the web yesterday?
It wasn't you and me.
Can you believe that? I mean, you really have to wonder.
Well, it's just sloppy. I mean, it's consistent, and, you know, obviously whoever made that mistake needs to to be penalized for that. But, you know, there's no question that, and I've been saying on this very broadcast, not today, but on other weeks in review, that, of course, there has been all along a major oil element to our being there. Until we can open up the free flow of oil from some places in the United States and in other parts of the world, and in the Gulf, the Gulf of Mexico, we're going to have to work to ensure the free flow of oil from the Persian Gulf.
Well, let me bring in a caller. Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. What I'd like to talk about is what Bush should say to his base about Iraq. And what he should say is, don't read books, especially that smarty pants Noam Chomsky's Imperial Ambitions. It's just too good. Remember, we have no problems. Any addict knows that. The trouble with you and the trouble with me is we got two eyes, but we just can't see, and I'm grateful.
Yeah, you want to react to that, Ed Garvey?
Well, it's pretty clear that the president doesn't burden himself reading books. But at least he's figured out as of yesterday that global warming is a reality. And he's going to have some conferences, which I think is really key.
Yeah, but we're still one of many countries that didn't ratify the Kyoto Treaty, so it doesn't matter.
Well, it doesn't matter because he's not going to do anything about it. I think it was a cynical statement.
Well, neither did the U.S. Senate.
Pardon?
Neither has the U.S. Senate.
Well, they should.
Well, they maybe should. I don't think they should, but...
But the president hasn't submitted the Kyoto Accords to the Senate for confirmation.
No, but this goes back to 1999 and 2000. This predates the Bush administration.
Listen, you can blame us for a lot, but don't blame us for what Bush is doing on global warming. How about the NASA guy?
The caller actually brought up Iraq. And clearly, all the way back to... You said, Ed, that you think that the election of last November was a referendum on Iraq. Clearly, it was a big part of the vote. But the people who were opposed to what's happening in Iraq were not going to vote for the Bush administration's supporters in the Republican House and Senate anyway.
Well, after September, Kevin, don't be in the doorway of a Republican congressional building because they're going to be you're going to get trampled as they're running away from President Bush. I mean, this thing is such a fiasco that no one thinks that the surge is working. No one really knew what the surge meant. And in fact, if Bush had said there was going to be a surge prior to the elections in November, I think there would have been an even bigger Democratic majority. But clearly, the candidates for president are going to have to run like crazy to get away from the Bush policy in Iraq and in Afghanistan.
This morning's Wall Street Journal has a column by Peggy Noonan.
There's a good one.
Yeah, she's ripping Bush for abandoning conservative
principles. Won't be doing that when Rupert Murdoch takes over the Wall Street Journal.
Well, you know, I've not necessarily always been a fan of Peggy Noonan, and yet I think in this column she really has put together a very good set, a very good agenda, a very good outline of how President George W. Bush did abandon and has abandoned for many years many of the more conservative principles, everything from economics to international policy and the rule of law. I'm sure we're going to talk today about immigration if it comes up. And Republicans, as a rule, are not happy with the way things are going in Iraq. Once again, just like, well, neither are the Democrats, but just like in Vietnam, the politicians are running the war, the battle, not the military not the military leaders. The fact of the matter is that Don Rumsfeld should have been thrown overboard about 6 months to a year before he was, not 2 weeks after the election, which by many people's accounts to whom I have spoken among conservative Republicans, thinking that if he was going to do it, he should have done it before the election, and a lot of people would have realized that that was part of his plan all along. His loyalty is turning some of the Republicans who are surrounding him into political hacks, and it's the same criticism that Republicans had of the Clinton administration and all of the political hacks that surrounded him for 7-8 years, and now George W. Bush is finding himself facing the same criticism, but it's starting to come from with his own party, and
but
that's the problem for him.
They had a rule that you could only hire political hacks. I mean, even for those who were put in place in Iraq.
I don't believe that.
Well, just take a look. Agency after agency, I mean, whether you're looking at FEMA and the disaster of Katrina, or you're looking at what Bremer did in Iraq, you had to pass a Republican test. Clearly, the whole effort to fire these U.S. attorneys was all about trying to put political hacks in place to scare people away from voting in the 2008 presidential election. I mean, I think if there's one surprise, it is that the total incompetence of this administration has to be a tremendous embarrassment to you and every other Republican. We used to at least think the Republicans might be competent, having run some businesses or done something else. But they have really found some lulus in this administration.
Got to take a short pause. We'll talk a little bit when we get back about whether the CDC did a heck of a job with that guy with TB in just a moment, plus other news of the week as we review the news of the week with Kevin Hermaning, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, and Ed Garvey, editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you along as we review the news of the week with Ed Garvey and Kevin Hermaning. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Ed Garvey, what do you make of this guy? Has a rare and very contagious and antibiotic-resistant form of tuberculosis. He travels around the world, gets married, comes back into the U.S. without being detected at the border, apparently, even though there was a watch for him. And now we find out that his father-in-law, new father-in-law, is like the leading researcher on TB and stopping its spread. What in the world's going on with this?
Well, you certainly have some questions about in-law problems. I mean, this is the most bizarre story of all in recent times. I mean, here's the father-in-law who's the researcher, as you point out, for the CDC on tuberculosis. His son flies to Rome to get married, knowing that he has this disease. He comes sailing back. Where's his wife? What's happening here? It's just goofy.
Yeah. Kevin Hermany, any thoughts on this one?
My thoughts are, first of all, he didn't break any laws, which is a problem. They ought to have a law against something like this. But secondly, I actually think he should be quarantined and probably for the rest of his life. That's what they used to do back in the 30s and 40s before they found cures for some of the illnesses of the past. And I don't know anything at all about TB as far as whether it's a virus or some other kind of illness. I know nothing about it. But if it is a virus, obviously we'll never find a cure because there is no such thing as a cure of a virus. And I think he ought to be quarantined. That's the only way that you solve a public health hazard.
He was quarantined, or at least put into isolation. It was the first case since 1963 where this has happened. Yeah.
Well, and you're talking about now in Denver?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's probably where he will live out the rest of his life.
Yeah. And he should be forced to listen to Don Rumsfeld's speeches.
Amy in Appleton, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. The aspect of this particular story that's been so disturbing to me is the incredible selfishness. And it's a snapshot, really, about how people feel that their own personal agendas, their own personal needs are so much more important than the common good, than the greater good. And to willfully, especially if in his family he has this father-in-law who's a researcher, I mean, to willfully put at risk all these other people, innocent children, innocent people who are just traveling about and doing their own business is just so abhorrent to me. And to now the media covering, I think it was NBC News last night I was watching, that they said, oh, he's got this great attitude and he's this funny guy, and who cares?
Exactly.
he has done this to these innocent people, that they have to hunt these people down. The amount of money that this is costing, I don't know, is it the American government? Who is paying for hunting these people down and trying to stop the spread?
I'm
so disgusted by this person. Yeah. I just can't believe it's getting positive press at all.
Oh, so do you think he ought to be quarantined? And I mean, it's not the same as being a criminal, but the rest of his life will result in something very similar to that.
He absolutely should be quarantined, and that there isn't a law. I love listening to your show and hearing the political pundits say there ought to be a law.
Those lawyers always come up with that solution.
This is a situation I think is so grave and is somewhat being glibly covered by the mainstream media. I think that this is the type of show that gives you an opportunity to talk about the really sincere seriousness of this.
Amy, I'm glad you called in. My producer did send me a note, says that the honeymooner, Andrew Speaker, claims that he was not told he was contagious before he got on the plane, that he was told, we advise you not to travel, but that he was not going to be, that he was not contagious, and that he actually has a tape of the meeting.
But the report came from the CDC, so of course his father-in-law wants to have him come back to the country.
That's true. This father-in-law connection is there's going to be more to this. I can't.
You know, it's a wonderful diversion. Actually, I mean,
a lot of strange things come out of Atlanta. Remember the Olympic bomber? I mean, there's a lot of strange things come out of Atlanta.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that we are pretty casual about life and death when it comes to our foreign policy as well. So this is one instance of a selfish individual who took the risk and risked all of our health. But, it's as if the media doesn't cover the 650,000 Iraqis who have died or the 4.5 million Iraqis who are now refugees. I mean, there seems to be You know, this is a sort of Ann Nicole Smith, where everybody can now focus on this guy out of Atlanta. Well, people are dying every day as we talk about Iraq.
Well, we do have a story this week, not only the Cindy Sheehan story of her stepping down as the face of the peace movement, but May has the highest casualties in Iraq in terms of soldiers and journalists. We had a visit by the president of Iraq. Everybody's saying, too, Ed Garvey, that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Well, it's collapsing. I mean, the people who could rebuild Iraq are now refugees. It's 4.5 to 5 million who are now outside the country. Close to a million, somewhere between 650,000 and a million have been killed. And it's collapsing into this civil war. There's nothing that we're doing that's going to stop that civil war. So whether we stay or whether we leave, it's going to get worse. And I'm saying it's not worth the life of a single American soldier. Because we don't have any idea of how to stop this or what the plan was or what it should be or what we could do. So we have our young people over there as targets for both sides, and I think we ought to get them out of there as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Herman?
If they wanted to fully complete the surge and make it work, and I'm not involved in any of the decision-making, nor is Ed, nor is anybody listening to
this
broadcast.
You're the former county chair.
Yeah, exactly, former. The reality is they need to secure the borders of Iraq.
Well, but think about that. I mean, you know,
it's not the people
we can't secure
of Iraq
our borders. How are you
going to
secure that border?
It's not the people of Iraq fighting. It's not the Iraqi citizens who are so disturbed by our presence there. It's the foreign interventionists who are really stirring up the pot there.
Well, the polls that are taken suggest
you called it a civil war.
Yeah.
It's not, you know what, a religious war is not really a civil war.
What is it?
Well, first of all, a civil war has more to do with disagreements with civilian governments and the way that governments are operating. And here we're talking about two different sects.
Well, we now know from the
the Shia and the Sunnis, you know, that's the problem there.
Well, of course it's the problem, but we now know that the administration was warned about a breakup into civil war, a breakdown in the civil war prior to the invasion.
Of course they were.
So they went ahead and took that risk. Again, I hate to make the comparison to this guy who got on the plane and went to Rome, but the fact is that they sent in you know, troops and bombs and all the rest of it, knowing full well that they had to gin up the intelligence to get us to go along with it. And they knew that it was probably going to end up in a civil war, and that's exactly what's happened.
You're Kevin Hermaning, also a former hostage during the Iranian hostage crisis. What do you make of the U.S. and Iran, and whether we should get Iran in talks to help stop the violence in Iraq?
Well, I actually think it's a good idea, but you can't really take the word of the mullahs and consider it to be fully acceptable and that it'll be held out. But I think it's a good idea. Saudi Arabia and Jordan and some of the other power brokers in that part of the world are very worried about an increasingly strong Iran flexing its political and its diplomatic and as well as its military and nuclear muscle. Those countries are very worried, and by being at the table and looking the enemy in the eye, so to speak, you're perhaps a little bit better and able to determine their true intentions.
Mm-hmm. Ed Garvey?
Well, there's no question we should be engaging in diplomatic negotiations. We did negotiate our way out of the Vietnam War. There is a way to negotiate with the Iranians or with the Libyans or you know, or the
Syrians
or Lebanese or whatever. I mean, this administration has abandoned the idea of diplomacy, and instead they're going to rely on their armed forces to impose their will. It's just not working, and it's time that we had somebody in the White House who understood that we have to try to bring about peace. And not try to stop the rest of the world from disagreeing with us.
Kind of like peace in our time, like Neville.
Well, I take Neville Chamberlain's...
I would have expected you to.
No. I guess I better drop it.
How about Fred Thompson in the White House? Ed Garvey, the Law and Order actor, former senator, is forming an exploratory committee. He's going to run for president.
Well, I think he'll gain a lot from the confusion that people have with Tommy Thompson.
No. There is no, yeah.
So I think that they'll probably give him a boost. You know, he's a very conservative guy. You know, he has a nice presence and so on. But I think he's just out of touch with the American people. And if he's the nominee, he will have about the same percentage of vote that Barry Goldwater had in 64.
Really? You don't think he'll...
No, there's no chance that he's going to win. I mean, he's going to be wrong on the war. He's going to be wrong on women's rights, on civil rights, on education, on health care. I mean, you just go down the list of issues, and he's going to be wrong, and he's not going to be elected.
What you mean is you won't be in agreement with him. That makes him wrong.
Do you like him, Kevin Herming?
I like him, but I think it's getting a little bit late to get into the race. I think his ego is certainly getting the best of him. I do like a lot of his policies. I don't like the fact that he supported the campaign finance reform bill, which really didn't reform anything. It just made it even less transparent, as if it's transparent now or was back then. But... you know what? As a generally pragmatic conservative Republican, I am more interested in winning the election than being dogmatic about one or two or three social issues. I like if I could have a little bit of a blend of all three of the leading contenders right now. I don't know who that is. It's not Fred Thompson, but he certainly is. I agree with Ed. He's going to garner a lot of support. He's certainly getting a lot of publicity. He's not even in the race. I also think that Newt Gingrich, who's traveling to Wisconsin on Friday of next, I guess in 2 weeks, he's planning to get into the race. I like Newt's ideas, but all of these guys, their time is, both of these guys, I think their time is past. It's past.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, Newt Gingrich, I mean, the idea is just kind of frightening, but speaking of egos.
Speaking of the presidential campaign and getting publicity, I just talked about this in the last hour. Hillary Clinton is asking YouTube viewers and other internet users to vote on a possible campaign song. Here's one of them. Let's see what you guys think of this one. That's Rock This Country by Shania Twain, one of the possible songs for Hillary Clinton's campaign. There are a number of others. You got a nomination for her, Ed Garvey?
Well, I don't know about the group, but I think that the theme should be If I Knew Then What I Know Now, she'd still be. So if we can put that to music, I think she'll do fine.
Ed Kevin Herman.
I was listening toward the end of the hour. I was at a breakfast this morning for Junior Achievement, and somebody called in and was talking about one of those classical themes. Somebody brought up the Little River Band.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was Cool Change. Time for a Cool Change,
yeah,
I think, was
of
the
course that,
whoever came up with this idea should be fired in the campaign.
No, why? No, seriously. This is getting her some attention. And
I know.
Younger
I know nothing about winning elections. It just seems to me we ought to take it more seriously.
You mean things like issues?
Yes.
Or real debates?
Yeah.
Not the kind of nonsense where a bunch of people who have absolutely no chance of garnering more than 1 or 2% of the vote get to participate on equal footing with the others.
Right.
And that's in both parties.
The only good thing that's come out of this lineup of 10 Republicans standing up on the stage looking like they're waiting for a tea time at the country club is the fact that three of them don't believe in evolution. I mean, here we are in the year 2007, and we've got three guys running for president who don't believe in evolution. I thought that was remarkable.
Well,
but why don't the parties take over these debates and have real debates, real discussions, instead of leaving it to anchor people from MSNBC or Fox?
Well, who is it working with Gingrich? Isn't it Cuomo working with Gingrich trying to get some real debate structure?
Well, I don't know, but somebody better do it. You'd think the Democratic Party would set up something, because this is silly.
No, the Democrats aren't interested in that, because then they'll have to showcase ideas, and they'd rather look for fancy theme songs to their campaigns.
Oh, these are fighting words, Kevin. I'm really angry now.
So you're not looking for much information to come out of the Sunday night debate with the Democratic candidates?
You can't. You have that many people, and you've got an anchor who knows that he's more important than anybody else on the stage. I'm not sure who's even sponsoring this one, but
CNN I know is the
well.
The
they'll have somebody there, yeah, who will be pompous and asking these profound questions.
Well, it's probably Wolf Blitzer if it's CNN.
Oh my!
And you know what good will come out of that one?
So, you know, it just seems to me that, there ought to be some sort of structure where you'd, engage in an hour-long, say, with four of them or two of them, where you could actually have some discussion. And the Democratic Party should just pick up the tab and, put it on, you know, live television or, you know, public television if they would do it. But to have the, networks in charge of the debates is, ridiculous. And it'll be even more ridiculous when it's over because you'll have the same problem between the Democrat and the Republican.
Well, and you'll have 3 hours of talking heads telling us what they didn't tell us during the debate.
Right.
Yeah.
To the spin room.
Let's see. The candidates are, you know, stumping around the campaign trail. A Democratic presidential candidate, Barack Obama, this week unveiled a $65 billion a year universal health care plan. What, know anything about that, Ed Garvey? Was that a good one?
I have not read it, so all I know is just what I've seen in the headlines. I will at some point, but not I haven't yet.
Yeah,
Kevin Herney? You know, there's got to be some reform in the health care system. There's no question about it, though I don't think that Governor Doyle ought to be raiding the malpractice fund. Nonetheless, when we're talking about the presidential campaigns, Mitt Romney's actually accomplished this in his state in a prudent way out in Massachusetts, and perhaps that's what Barack Obama is looking to try to emulate on the national level. It's not obviously Mitt Romney had to get it through a legislature, so it doesn't it doesn't have only conservative nor liberal principles to it, but obviously there was a good compromise brought about, and it actually has improved the situation out in Massachusetts when it comes to the uninsured.
The problem with this kind of an issue goes right back to campaign finance. The candidates are afraid to take an honest position for a Canadian system because the insurance industry has so much money into these campaigns and the HMOs and the hospitals and so on. We're wasting more money in administration than any country in the world. We have the most expensive system and yet not nearly as good as most of the industrialized world. It's a disgrace. Harry Truman called for single-payer health care back in 1948. Here we are in 2007, and we're no closer to it. We have millions and millions of people who have no health insurance whatsoever. This is unacceptable.
You know, we might want to give the candidates a little more credit. Maybe the reason they're not embracing a Canadian-style system is because they, as well as everybody else, knows that it's not working.
Except for the Canadians. They think it works very well.
Actually, Canada, as well as Great Britain, they are looking to bring about more privatization
Nonsense.
Into their system.
Nonsense.
Both countries are at this point.
Well, people like you in those countries are, but the people aren't.
Let me take a short pause. We will invite listeners. We had full lines. People all wanted to talk, gentlemen, about the TB guy. So we're going to now. Anyway, on to some state issues and a couple of other national issues. I wanted to ask Ed Garvey about this Supreme Court decision on the statute of limitation on discrimination suits when we return. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. This is The Week in Review, talking with Ed Garvey and Kevin Hermaning. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen and her guest will talk about programs to prevent obesity coming up after 9. I'm talking with Kevin Hermaning and Ed Garvey, and we are reviewing the news of the week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We'll talk about some state issues in just a minute, but I know, Ed Garvey, before we started, we talked some about this Supreme Court ruling in favor of employers by limiting a worker's ability to sue employers for pay discrimination that was old pay discrimination. There's like a statute of limitations on this. Talk about that case.
Well, it's an outrageous decision, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg announced her dissent from the bench and urged Congress to overturn it, and I certainly hope that they will and expect that they will if it becomes a national issue. What the court has said is that unless you know within 180 days of being employed that your pay scale is discriminatory because you're a woman and the men are getting more for doing the same job, you're out of luck. You can't file a suit. Now, imagine you go to work. And what do? You walk around and ask everybody, what do you make? What do you earn? What's your contract call for? You'd be fired right then. So it's totally unrealistic, and I think it invites all kinds of people filing suits just based on preliminary information. So hopefully the Congress will get a grip on this and overturn it. Those who thought that Alito and Roberts would be something less than ideologues certainly now know that, that's not the case. So we have a Supreme Court that's going to undo everything from Brown versus Board of Education to Roe versus Wade.
Well, so Congress has to pass some sort of law that says you have more than 180 days to do
right.
this. Yeah. Kevin Hermaning? Oops, go ahead, Kevin.
Well, I was just going to say, are you saying she should have 19 years to do that?
Sure. It's when you find out that it happened, not when it did happen. I mean, if you find out that 5 years after the fact that you've been discriminated against for 5 years, you ought to be able to bring that lawsuit. The time should start running from the moment you learn about it, not when it started, because you don't know when it started. Mm-hmm. There's no way to find out.
I guess I'm not of the belief that the reason that people are underpaid, or I shouldn't say that, I should say not paid the same as somebody else doing exactly the same job, perhaps has nothing to do with discrimination. Perhaps it has to do with education. Perhaps it has to do with actually there are other benefits that same person is getting, perhaps. I mean, you can't possibly say that just because someone has the same tenure of service
Kevin,
they should have the same pay.
Kevin, if all the women in the place are getting less than the men, they're getting 70 cents to the dollar for doing the same job, somebody might reasonably conclude that there's discrimination based on gender, or African Americans are getting 30% less. One could reach that conclusion. So, I mean, that's what this is all about. They're not easy cases to win, but now they've made it virtually impossible.
Yeah, let's switch topics. Paul and Slinger, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I am amazed with the governor and the legislature on this proposed tax on out-of-state oil corporations, which are publicly held companies. And these oil companies are owned by stockholders, and the stockholders, a major portion, are state teachers' retirement funds, state pension funds across the country, from Nebraska, California, to Wisconsin, to Maine. And so this is just clearly a stunt on the part of the legislatures and the governor to, you know, make it look good before the taxpayers. If I'm in some of these funds, why are they checks, dividend checks, flow into my fund? So he's basically attacking me and all the teachers and people that are employed by the state of Wisconsin, etc. So I just think they're wasting time.
And apparently, the attorney.
The former
Attorney General, Peg Lautenschlager, says it's probably unconstitutional, Ed Garvey.
Well, I'm reminded of the other Bob Dylan Fest. He wrote in 73, "The Vandals Got the Handles." And the problem we have here is we've allowed these oil companies to merge and consolidate, and they are controlling the price of gasoline at the pump, and they're robbing us of, the tourist industry is going to suffer. We're all going to suffer. Food prices are up. Everything's up because of what the oil companies are doing, and they're not paying their fair share of taxes. So I applaud Governor Doyle for at least trying to get something back into the economy that's going to help the state of Wisconsin. The two oil companies that are located in Wisconsin apparently have paid almost no taxes, and so it seems to me there ought to be some kind of a sharing of the burden. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is constantly talking about a better business climate. You got to talk about some business responsibility. What the oil companies are doing is almost criminal.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Hermaning?
Actually, $730 million a year is flowing into the state coffers just from the gas stations that are based in the state of Wisconsin.
What's that got to do with it?
That has to do with the fact that you said that oil companies or people selling oil aren't paying taxes. That's completely untrue. And oil companies such as
Murphy
and Shell both paid no corporate income taxes.
There you go.
Well, they paid no corporate income taxes from 2003 to 2005, but they paid approximately $800 million a year in other taxes that are corporately paid by the shareholders, if you will, and if we want to bring it back to the caller's comments, through Social Security taxes and other types of taxes, property taxes on their properties.
But do you agree with Peg Lautenschlager it's unconstitutional?
It's going to be found unconstitutional, but you know what? We're talking about an issue that's never going to become law. to even go to court, because the Republican legislature in the assembly isn't going to pass this anyway. And you're going to say it's because of the road builders and Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, but in fact labor unions are stepping up to the plate and opposing this. It would be found unconstitutional if it ever got to that level.
Actually, the highway builders and the laborers and others are in favor of the tax, because it's going to go into building more roads.
This is not going to go into the gas tax fund. This would go into the general receipts fund.
Doyle says it's going to make up for the shortfall in the highway. And are you questioning the governor?
Yeah, imagine
that. You've gone too far.
Let's talk about another shortfall. University faculty say they're not getting enough money and other things, and they're leaving. The political science department has lost 8 professors. UW officials are worrying as more and more faculty members leave. Governor Doyle is calling on lawmakers to support his plan to increase funding for the UW system, saying universities need a major investment to remain competitive. Kevin Hermaning?
You know, back to the days in the 80s when Ed and I were campaigning, this issue was also at the top of the agenda. It's not going to go away. Anytime you have top-quality employees, or in this case the professors at a university system, there are going to be offers made to them to go elsewhere. Athletic directors face the same thing. Chancellors face the same thing. We have a new one here at a UW system in Marathon County. These folks are lured away by offers of bigger and better dollars and benefit opportunities, sometimes even better climates in which they'll live or they choose to live. They're going to ultimately decide, but it certainly isn't that university professors in the state of Wisconsin aren't being paid enough or don't have enough days off or aren't a beneficiary of the third best pension system in the United States behind the Teamsters in California.
Well, so, I have two ideas. One is that we just adopt a reserve system like baseball. Once you sign a contract here, you can't leave. The other is that it's all about prisons. Frank Remington, my hero from the law school years ago, used to say that at some point Wisconsin will have to choose between a great university system and very large prisons. And that choice has been made. We have very large prisons. They're overcrowded. We're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on prisons when we should be putting the money into the university system. So I'm sure that some professors are underpaid. Overall, the problem is that the choices for the students are less. The tuition is higher. The debt load is greater. We're abandoning our mission, which is to educate the next generation of leaders in favor of incarcerating people for crimes that should be treated out in other ways.
The waiting list to get into the university is very lengthy. People are applying in greater numbers than ever
before. And they're leaving
with
$30,000, $50,000 in debt because you and I aren't paying our fair share to the university. It's going into the prisons. There's a waiting list to get into prison, and it's $30,000 to $50,000 a year for each prisoner. That is ridiculous.
Let me ask you, Ed Garvey, this, and Kevin Hermaning, too. Judicial candidates in Wisconsin can answer questions about issues, the right to life, and some residents filed a lawsuit challenging the rules that say a judge cannot speak about issues while on the campaign trail. But federal judge John Shabazz decided the rules are unconstitutional and it is okay for a candidate to talk about issues as long as the candidate doesn't commit to deciding a case one way or the other.
Well, I think in some ways it makes great sense, but the real problem is this. As long as Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce thinks they can buy the court, it doesn't make any difference what anybody's saying. In this last Supreme Court race where they poured millions of dollars into it, we had every newspaper in the state endorsed Linda Clifford, and she lost big time because of the money that was spent by WMC. And they've already announced that they're going to win the next seat. So they're pouring the money in, and unless we have campaign finance reform that affects the judiciary, it doesn't matter whether the candidates speak out on issues or not. The candidate without the money is going to lose.
What do you mean they've already announced they're going to win the next seat?
WMC has a web page, and they have this phony interview with James Buchan where he talks about these. The court is now split 3-3-1, and they got to pick up that one seat where Justice Lewis Butler is running for re-election.
Yeah, Kevin Hurry.
And they've got a campaign to go out and raise money to help do it, as do the opponents to WMC. The fact is that judicial candidates should be able to answer questions about issues. There was never a law that prohibited them from doing it. It was an ethics rule. The ethics board has been found to be so out of touch with what is going on culturally and politically in this state for so many years.
Because we have no ethics?
Well, it's poor. The ethics committee is, just look at the people who are appointed to it. You and I haven't been appointed to it, and we might bring some better candor to the discussions. But the fact of the matter is that Federal Judge Shabazz, I think, made the right decision here. The ethics rules have been unconstitutional.
Yeah.
It's a freedom of speech issue.
That's
what campaigns are supposed to be all about.
Let's talk. We're running out of time, and a number of things the state legislature was up to this week. A hearing on whether there should be a smoking ban in Wisconsin, a statewide smoking ban, or whether bars should be exempted from it. Bars arguing that they should be exempted from this ban. Ed Garvey, what do you think is going to happen?
Should be a statewide ban. Minnesota has done it. They've survived. It's time that we took into account not only the people who are there, but the workers who are forced to breathe in the toxins. So I'm all in favor of it.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Hermany?
Well, I'm not in favor of it, but not for the reasons that other people might think. As long as tobacco is not an illegal product, people should be able to use the product. There are products that are ruled illegal and that are considered to be that you cannot have or use or make available to other people, and penalties are brought on folks and criminalization. Until we do that, and I'm not suggesting we should, but I think it's hypocritical to say that this legal product should be banned in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, you're wrong for the wrong reasons.
All right, Alberta Darling, Senator Alberta Darling, wants Wisconsin's Justice Department to provide mental health information to national databases to stop the mentally ill from buying guns. Do we want to do this, Ed Garvey?
Sure, and also throw in the legislature.
What?
Do we want mental health records?
Do we want to do this, Kevin Hermany?
Well, you know, you're talking about the state's online court record system and the Department of Justice in Madison and the CCAP program. I mean, I just think that the state doesn't have the ability. Look at its problems with the election registration system. How can you expect there to be good electronic systems when they've had so many problems in the past? I think it would be a good idea.
Well, I don't know if we have enough time for this email, but I'm going to do it quickly anyway. John in Milwaukee emails, an international issue. This week, Russia was testing some missiles, and Putin spoke out about how they are being forced into doing this by aggressive U.S. foreign policy. What do your guests think about Putin's actions and statements? 30 seconds, Ed Garvey first.
Well, I don't blame Putin for doing it, and it seems to me the United States should not be trying to put missiles back into Europe. We just seem to be asking for a fight everywhere in the world. I think it's time that we go back to the UN and look for peace instead of rattling sabers.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Hermany?
You need to read something other than Fighting Bob blog.
FightingBob.com.
The fact of the matter is that we're not putting missiles there. We're putting a missile defense system in the former Eastern Bloc.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What we're doing there.
Right, right, right.
Okay, so I guess we're going to have to leave it there. And you didn't get in the September 8th mention.
No, I think that Kevin will be at Fighting Bob Fest on September
8th. You know, I can't believe I haven't been invited to any of the previous five either.
Well, I hereby invite you.
And I want to congratulate you, Kevin Hermany. I know you just came back from a junior achievement function where you received an award for being a good junior achievement leader.
Something. I've had the privilege of being involved for 20 years in the classrooms with the kids. 50 years ago, a lot of people were self-employed, and a lot fewer people are today.
Thank you very much for being with us. And Ed Garvey, I'm glad you're still alive. You were on the New York Times obit page yesterday.
Yes, I was looking at the obituaries, and there was my picture, so I was a little bit nervous.
It was a former colleague.
who died.
Yeah, all right. Well, we're glad to have you.
Got a lot of phone calls, though.
Thanks to both. You were out of time. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network.